This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2016, held at Faith Builders on August 1 through 5.
Good morning. All right. Well, good to see that everyone's still awake. One of the probably secret objectives of having a week like this right before school starts is to get everyone's sitters trained, to develop in you empathy for your students. So hopefully some of you are feeling some of those pains and are already beginning to empathize with your students. But look forward here to a session called Priorities for Teachers. Why do we need priorities? Larry, I'm going to need your help. Larry had the misfortune of being in a group with me over the summer, so I know him better than many of the rest of you. Come on up, Larry. And so you will be my victim today. Are you okay with that?
Yes, sir.
Good to see you again, brother. So why do we need priorities? Let me demonstrate. This won't hurt, Larry. Just stand still. There we go. Why do we need priorities? Because without priorities, you're kind of like Larry. You can't see a lot. How you doing in there, Larry?
Okay.
He said okay. Why don't you try walking around a little bit, Larry? Down the aisle. Up. You have trouble seeing where you're going. You tend to be confused. That's good. Don't want you on anybody's lap. Yep, turn. One back. There we go. So without priorities, we are like Larry. That was excellent. Let's give Larry a round of applause here. You may be seated. Without priorities, we bump into things. Without priorities, we may look busy, but accomplish little. I'm convinced that many teachers do not have clarity on what their priorities should be. And imagine if we get a whole room full of Larrys in your school, a whole school full of teachers who are not clear on their priorities. Imagine the possibilities. Priorities are a big deal. But what are they? Well, priorities are the things that you place at the top of your list. A priority is the thing that you focus on. A priority is something that you think is more important, that is a difference maker. I'm hopeful that nobody's going to argue with me that priorities are important. So what are the benefits of establishing priorities? Well, I thought of three. There's probably more. The first one is the process of selecting priorities helps us to identify the things that really matter. I'm assuming most of you could have spent this week at the beach. You're here. Thank you. I'm assuming that you felt the need, some urgency to prepare for the coming school year. And so you made being here a priority. Without priorities, we lack focus. There are lots of things that try to draw our focus. And the more distracted we are, the less effective we are. Examples abound of people walking and driving while texting. And we get to see the results of people who are distracted in their pursuit. Benefit number two of establishing priorities is identifying key priorities will help us put energy in the areas that will move us toward our goals. Without priorities, we can find ourselves failing to make the difference that we had hoped to achieve. We work hard, we put in long hours, but we're frustrated by the lack of results. Priorities. Why do we need them? Because when we're hammered by discouragement and exhaustion and extreme busyness, welcome to the profession of teaching where these things happen. When we're hammered by discouragement, exhaustion, and extreme busyness, clear priorities will help us keep doing the right things and pull us through tough times. When the heat gets turned up, we tend to turn to the things that are most interesting or the most urgent. But if we have clear priorities, we can keep pushing forward. So this week, I look forward to spending four sessions with you looking at the topic of priorities for newer teachers. So I just want to pause a moment and take a look at what shoes you're in just a little bit. So I'm just going to ask you to raise your hands, and I'll give three options if you make that four. If you've never taught before, 1 year of teaching, 2 years of teaching, or three or more. So, how many of you have not taught a full year yet? All right, so a nice part of the crowd. Okay, 1 year, 2 years, three or more years. All right, they're fading out. Okay, so interesting variety. A lot of people that have butterflies in their stomach for the first year. Welcome. You'll experience lots more butterflies. Before we jump in too much deeper, I just wanted to pause a moment to just give a little bit of introduction myself. Some of you say, who is this guy? I live around here. I work here at Faith Builders. I work with the Training Institute and administrator over there. Faith Builders has three specific divisions. There's the division called the Christian School, and we have about 100 students here in the Christian School. And then and we're being hosted in that facility. Then we also have the Resource Group, and the Resource Group does anything that the Institute or the Christian School doesn't do. And so the Resource Group puts on events like this one. You're here at a Resource Group event. Resource Group publishes some books, some curriculum, and so there's Resource Group. And then the third part is the Training Institute, and that's the post-secondary part, the two-year Training Institute where we've trained teachers for years, and there's also now some other options as well. And so the Training Institute, that's where I live. Are you ready for me to pull this up? All right, we're back. In the back, there's a group of people back there, mostly ladies, and that is my family. I've been married for 15 years. My wife, Starla, and we have four daughters and a little son. And our church family is in York, Pennsylvania. It's Tidings of Peace in the city of York. So we've enjoyed being in an urban place. And I just want to talk a little bit about my work background just so you have a context from which to understand what I'm talking about. As you become a teacher and as you get older, you'll learn that most everybody has an opinion. Not all opinions are equally valid. And I've learned even that very good-sounding opinions are sometimes erroneous. And so it's important that we learn to evaluate what we hear, including from what you hear coming from my mouth this morning. And so I just want to give a little brief overview of my experiences so you can understand that context. I graduated from Mount Hope Mennonite School. It was a little school, an ACE school. The most I ever had in my grade was about 7 through my school years, but until I graduated, I was the only one left, so I was the valedictorian of my graduating class. After high school, I worked some as an electrician, Then I sensed that I was about to be drafted by my church and for a teaching position, so I came to Faith Builders in 1997. That's a long time ago, but I came here for about 4 months and have been coming back ever since. I found Faith Builders to be a place with personal connections that just made the annual pilgrimage back here worth it, back for teachers' conferences, back for different events. And so I've been coming here since 1997. After studying here for a few months, I did indeed teach for a year in a little ACE school. I had, I believe, 9 whole students that year. Enjoyed it, thought it was great, decided, yes, teaching is what I want to do, but I had a problem. I was a guy who hoped to someday get married, and I looked at my salary of $8,000 and decided that was probably not going to support a family. And so I decided I needed to find a way to make that sustainable if I wanted to be in teaching. And so I went to Millersville University, local school, and got a degree in social studies education. Coming out of Millersville, I got my first teaching job after at Conestoga Christian School. That was a school that was formerly Mennonite down in Morgantown, Pennsylvania. And they were just kind of purging the last vestiges of Anabaptism from the school about the time I came on the scene. So I was an interesting fossil from the past in that school. And it was really a unique experience because a lot of these students' grandparents would have been plain people. And they didn't quite know who they were and why they did what they did. And so I had this chance to kind of be an ambassador to their grandparents' generation. And it was a wonderful experience. God gave me a great favor there. I worked at Conestoga for 5 years. I sensed that it was time to move on. I was looking at other options, possibly the public school near our church in York. Well, then I got this phone call from a guy from Ephrata Mennonite School. I didn't really know anything about the school. And he said, hey, would you consider coming over here and being our administrator? And I had thought about administration earlier, but once I got into school long enough to find out that administrators are just these people that kind of bang their head against concrete walls all day long, I realized that administration probably was not a direction I wanted to go. So it was honored that he asked. I kind of thought it was funny and forgot about it. And a couple months later, they called back and said, did you have enough time to think about it yet? I said, oh, maybe I'll start thinking about it. And long story short, I went over to Ephrata. And that was a school at that point of about 180 students and way over my head. And I learned on the job. And I had 8 years at Ephrata Mennonite, and it was just a fascinating experience to grow there. And then our family moved here to Guy's Mills about a year ago. We had, again, kept up our connections. And I'd been with the Faith Builders Board for a few years, and so we had the privilege of moving here. I also worked with Tidings of Peace. Our home church has a school, so a little self-study school in York. I believe there's some representatives from Tidings of Peace out there. Well, maybe not in this room. And also I worked with Urban Mennonite Ministries in Baltimore, where Reuben Petersheim founded a school down there. So I just give that range of experiences. So I have worked with the little schools, one student in a grade, and I've also a lot of my experiences from larger schools. But I have been exposed to a lot of the options in between. And I'd be happy to talk about experiences with you and what I learned along the way at some point this week. Getting back to our priorities. 4 days, I picked 4 priorities. And today, the priority that I have chosen to look at is promises. Promises. Promises can be a kind of a scary word, kind of like chains. Chains don't always have a positive connotation. A lot of people think about chains as something that holds you down. I was bound by chains. But I'm a farmer when I'm not here. And around the farm, you can never get enough chains. Chains are a good thing. Chains help you to hold down a load. They help you to lift things. They help to pull things together. And so the word promises is a little bit like chains. It can feel a little bit binding, but it can also be something that pulls things together. And so today we want to look at some promises. As we look at promises, specifically at the implied promises that come with the teaching profession, I want us to realize that the promises we make when we agree to be a teacher, the responsibilities that we embrace, they don't need to feel binding. They can actually give strength and pull things together as we embrace them. So let me explain a little bit more about this idea of promises. It might be a bit of an awkward word. I'm not here to tell you today to make a lot of promises. I'm here to tell you that in the act of agreeing to take the job of a teacher, you are automatically assumed to have made a number of implied promises or commitments. You've taken on yourself a whole load of expectations or promises or commitments. And so if you're a first-year teacher, you may not have spent a lot of time thinking about what each part of your new constituency expects. But be assured, there are expectations, firm expectations, that will feel like broken promises to those constituents if you do not deliver. Now, I need to put in a disclaimer. Please don't hear me saying that you should be controlled by every expectation of every person around you. You will go crazy and miss the whole point of having proper priorities. But I am here to say that each constituency that you serve as a teacher does have legitimate expectations of you. And this is not a bad thing. It's not even a scary thing. But it's a thing to be taken seriously. And so, as new teachers, we can keep the teacher promises of our profession by taking some actions. And so today I'm looking at four actions. The first action is demonstrating awareness. Oops, that's forward one. There we go. Awareness. You may not have thought about all the constituency groups that you are responsible to as a teacher. There's a number of them. The groups to which you have made implied promises by signing a contract or doing a handshake or agreeing to be a teacher. So who are some of these constituencies that you need to be aware of? Well, I'll start with the board. I assume that the board hired you. In many of your cases, one of the board members is likely the person that signs your paycheck. Always good to keep them happy. Many of these board members probably also have children in your school. So they have this unique and complicated with relationship with you, in that they're both your boss and your customer. But the board is a group not to be afraid of. They hired you because they thought you could do the job. They respect you as a person who is worthy of influencing their children. So what's this group of people expect? Let's start real simple. That you will show up at the expected time every day. Folks, I don't know what it is, but I run into people in Christian ministry that somehow think if I get paid less than the market rate, somehow that gives me an excuse to do a less than professional job. And I'm telling you, there's lots of businesses out there where if you show up late 3 times in a month, you're fired. I'm not sure why we should expect less of ourselves in serving the Lord in a Christian school. If your school asks you to be there at 7:30, be there. What's the boy expect of you? That you won't call in sick unnecessarily or take excessive vacation days. Maybe all your friends are getting married in 1 year, but you probably shouldn't take 8 Fridays off to attend all their weddings in the first semester. You may need to prioritize. Some of you are still in the youth group. What's the board expect? That your behavior on weekends will now reflect your position so that it does not undermine your authority with students during the week. What's the board expect? That you will respect their authority and whatever authority structure is in place. What's the board expect? That you will work hard with a good attitude. Teaching is a unique work in that it typically gives you a lot of flexibility. You don't have a boss breathing down your neck all day long. You might have 20 bosses, but you don't have a boss breathing down your neck all day. You have a lot of flexibility. You have a lot of flexibility in when you're going to do your lesson plans and when you're going to grade your papers. A lot of trust is given. And so there's an expectation that you'll work hard with a good attitude. What's the board expect? That you will do your job in a way that minimizes complaints and concerns that make it to their ears. The board's real job is to cast vision, to set governing policy, to give accountability to the principal or the administrator, and to ensure that the school is viable financially and legally. Sometimes student issues will get to, the board. That's normal. Sometimes they'll need to be addressed by the board. But your job is to make sure that it doesn't happen very often. What's the board expect? They could rightfully expect gratitude from you that you have the opportunity to serve as a teacher. It really is a privilege to be given the keys of influence to the entire next generation of your church. So there's constituency groups to which you have made implied promises by becoming a teacher. And the board's just the first one. Next, there's the administrator or the principal. Again, I understand there's a variety of schools. Sometimes this is more defined than others. Sometimes this person is actually part of the board. But what's the administrator, the principal, expect from you? What are the implied promises that you're making by taking this position? Well, that you agree to be a team player. That you're willing to follow policies and give and take. There's just not room in our schools for people on the staff who are offended easily, who gripe about little stuff. We've got an important job, a big job. We need team players. What else can the administrator or principal expect of you? That you earn the respect of students and parents. When you're hired and you walk into a school, they can give you a beautiful classroom. They can give you a an excellent curriculum. They can send you a nice bunch of rosy-cheeked youngsters. But they cannot make those students respect you. And if those students do not respect you, you will have a nightmare. The principal can't do it for you. The board can't do it for you. I've seen it. When a teacher is not able to do that, when I was in school, I don't want to say, I plead the fifth here if I get too far. But anyway, you can plant a member of the ministry in a chair in the back of the classroom all day long, and you still can't make the students respect you. That's your job. You need to earn their respect. Without it, you can do virtually nothing. What's your principal expect? That you will find a way to earn the respect of your students and of their parents. What's a principal rightly get to expect of you? That you keep a neat classroom. I had a teacher who could not get this to save his life. His classroom was awful. You'd walk into the classroom, and you could just feel the grit under your floor. He was a science teacher, so they did play with dirt in that classroom. But, I mean, we did have a cleaning crew, too, that cleaned the school a couple times a week. You walk into his classroom, and you look at the desks and the chairs, and they're... You look at the teacher desk, and there was stuff. You look at the back shelf by the windows, and there were green things growing. Some things perhaps intentionally, perhaps some things not. You looked at his study desk. Well, you looked at the things covering his study desk. You know, and I would try and give him hints. You ought to clean up your classroom. And this was not an incompetent person. This is like a 40-year-old guy with numbers of children. He was a pastor, but he could not keep his classroom clean. And, you know, hints didn't work. You need to clean up your classroom or it may infringe on your ability to get a contract for next year. You know, hints like that even, you know, seemed to not work. So finally, he would go in and clean his classroom after I told him to. It's just I couldn't tell any difference. So finally, I realized I needed to be very explicit. And so I'd go into his classroom at night when he wasn't there, and I'd take my cell phone, and I'd go over, and I'd take a picture of the pile of experiments on the floor. And then I'd go over to his desk, and I'd take a picture of his desk. And then I'd go over to the sink, and I'd take a picture of the pile of dirty dishes in his sink. And I'd email them to him and say, these three things, you know, how explicit can you be? Your administrator has the right to expect that you have a neat classroom. And I know that many of you have exquisite classrooms. But just making sure for the 1% who might not know that that is a reasonable expectation. Your administrator or principal has a right to expect that you develop a plan for each lesson, for each day, for each week. Teachers are expected to have a plan. Have most of us winged it who've been in the classroom for a while? Yes, we have. Should you wing it every day? No, there's a big problem if you're winging it with any regularity. What are some other expectations? Expectations that come from the church. That you will use your influence with students to build up the church. That you'll encourage support for the standards of the church. The spirit of the standard, not just the letter of it. That you'll be a role model for the church in attendance and behavior. Other constituencies to which you have implied promises by becoming a teacher, they include your colleagues, fellow teachers. Commitment that you'll be an encourager and not a complainer. In a lot of public schools, they talk about the most toxic place in the school is the teacher workroom or the teacher's lounge. That should never be the case in our schools. Will you not be on time for staff meetings, but will you be early for staff meetings? It seems like every school has one or two clowns that always have to walk in late. And I'm assuming because you're here, you're probably not those clowns. But every school seems to have one or two of them. People that really project by their actions that my time is more important than everybody else's time. You all can get here 2 minutes early and wait because what you do isn't as important as what I do. I can march in 2 minutes late and expect you all to wait for me, or even just go ahead without me because your meeting's really not that important either. Ouch. Your colleagues should have a commitment to them that you'll be early for staff meetings. And to your colleagues, that you will do at least your fair share of shared tasks. And they may vary from school to school. So maybe staff devotions, hallway bulletin boards, recess duty, things like that. There's other people to which you have commitments. To parents. Each student is one of their parents' greatest treasures. And I don't know that there's any way to explain it or even understand it until you have a child of your own. But they're just an incredible treasure. And as a teacher with a room full of 20 of them, it's just hard to wrap your head around that. But parents expect you to treat that treasure with love, with respect. What do parents expect? That you won't play favorites, boys over girls, or older versus younger, or popular versus unpopular. Parents may have an expectation that you'll believe only half of what you hear about their home. And this can be advantageous if you can reciprocate and say, I'll only believe half of what your child says about your home if you only believe half of what they say about me in my classroom. What do parents expect? A purposeful, reasonable homework load. It's a common topic. It's a fair topic. Teachers say, well, they've got to have the homework. Fine. Make sure you have a reason for it. Make sure that you're thinking about Wednesday night church. Make sure you're thinking about a weekend. If they need the homework, good. But make sure it's purposeful, not busy work. What other constituents do you serve? You serve students. What promises do you have to them? The implied promises are that you will love those students and that you will treat them with respect. Everyone, every day. The students don't know what they're supposed to learn. That's why you're the teacher. They're the student. They don't know what they're supposed to learn. They're trusting you to know that and to do it well. So as a teacher, we've got a tough job. We have a lot of people to which we have a lot of commitments. We even have expectations of ourselves. And those can be pretty complicated sometimes when we don't meet those. And again, I just want to stop and issue my disclaimer again. We're not to be controlled by just personal expectations. Well, the last teacher always had every student's name memorized by the second day of school. So I'm going to stay up half the night. No. If you have a terrible memory like mine, it might take a few weeks. Don't beat yourself up. Do your job as well as you can, but you don't need to match the last teacher. The last teacher always made a special homemade Christmas present for every student. That's great. So glad they did. But you don't need to be controlled by that expectation. Wow, a lot of expectations to a lot of people. The good news is you don't have to keep every one of those expectations in mind and just check off every box at the end of every day. Because I have three more actions that I want to talk about very briefly today. And if you follow them, you should cover many of these expectations fairly automatically. So there was four actions I'm looking at today as we think of keeping our promises. The first one is demonstrating awareness. The second one is demonstrating character. Character does count. Integrity is a huge deal. Do I do what's right, whether or not I have an audience? Do I have a commitment to honesty, despite the fact that as a teacher, part of the requirements is that I will need to have many difficult conversations. If you're going to try and be a teacher and run away from tough conversations, you are going to have a lot of running to do. It goes with the territory that you learn to have difficult conversations. Now, part of the fun of that is that there's an incredible amount of skill that goes into having difficult conversations. And, you know, by about the 10th year, you should be mastering a number of them. A new teacher will say things to a parent like, "Johnny is having a bad year." An experienced teacher is much more likely to say, "Yeah, Johnny's really having a challenging year this year." New teacher, "Johnny is failing math." Experienced teacher might say to the parent, "Boy, Johnny's really struggling to keep his head above water in math this year." Sitting in parent-teacher conference, the new teacher says, "Johnny was very naughty yesterday." Experienced teacher might say, "Boy, Johnny's really having difficulty with making wise choices in the classroom." And the difference, the slight difference in those statements and in the tone in which I said them makes the difference between the parent reacting to you and you setting up a fight with the parent, or the parent being on your side and you working together to solve the problem. Demonstrating character, and there's lots of finesse to build there. Integrity. Trustworthiness, keeping appropriate confidences with your parents, your students, and your colleagues. Prompt initiation of communication when there's an issue. I'm a parent. I have 5 children. Nobody invests more in my children than me and my wife. We care deeply. And if my child goes to school and begins demonstrating a character flaw, and you withhold that information from me, I am not going to be happy with you as the teacher. I care about my child's character way more than you do. And if you withhold that information for 2 months and wait till parent-teacher conference to tell me that for the last 2 months my child has had a significant character flaw being exhibited in your classroom, I am going to be very disappointed in you. Does that make sense? Prompt communication when there's a significant... You know, and it's not calling up the teacher and the parent and beating them up. They care. You're saying, "Boy, I just wanted you to know. I wish I didn't have to make this call today, but here's what I saw in the classroom today." Trustworthiness. It's keeping parents in the loop. It's giving prompt responses when contacted. Parent gives you a ring. They call or they leave you an email that you respond to that promptly. That you avoid histrionics. When you come into a school, there's probably a black sheep family or two in your school that's probably had a history with the other teachers or the administrator. And are you going to give them a fair shake in their own right? Or are you going to build on what has built up over time? It's a beautiful thing when you can give people a clear slate to really be a trustworthy person. So number one, the first one is awareness. The second action that you can take to keep the teacher promises is to demonstrate character. The third is to demonstrate competence. When you come into the classroom, especially as a new teacher, how do you demonstrate competence? Well, the first one is simply to speak with confidence. There's few things more disconcerting than having a new teacher come into the school and they have no confidence. Like, good morning, boys and girls. Welcome to school. I'm so glad you're here. We have some books over here on the table. I'd like each of you to get one. Okay, go ahead. Good morning, boys and girls. I'm confident we're going to have a great year together. I'm shaking like jelly inside. You know, I said have integrity, but here's a place where you need to fake it till you make it, you know? Good morning, boys and girls. Lift your head. Speak confidently. Project your voice. Folks, I have a plan. We need to get these textbooks handed out. I want to do it in an orderly way. The plan is row one's going to get up. They're going to file in this way. Each one of you is going to pick up a book. You're going to come and sit down. As soon as they're all seated, row two, you go. Row three, row four. All right, go. Totally different. Showing that you have a plan. For lack of time, I'm just going to move on. But as a teacher, your job is to be thinking one step ahead of your students. And if you don't have a plan, it becomes painfully obvious pretty quickly. And bad things happen. Using enthusiasm. When you have energy, your students get energy. If your students are all looking lethargic, check the mirror first before you beat up on them. Know your material. Perhaps the most obvious one. This is what makes being a first or second year teacher so brutally difficult. Because we're learning the material a lot of times alongside of our students. Or maybe we know it in the lower elementary grades, but we don't know how to teach it yet. The first 2 years are incredibly challenging years. But you build each year a little bit more over the last. In demonstrating competence, I'll say one more thing. Learn to remember what you say. Students will quote you on a regular basis. Students will misquote you on a regular basis. Get used to it. I don't consider myself to have a very good memory, but I generally have learned, I'm not sure how, to remember what I say. Because the students will go home and they will quote me. They will go home and they will misquote me. Parents will hear those misquotes and they will get very concerned, as they should. Parents will come to me and say, my child said such and such. And if you say, oh, yeah, I don't really remember what we were talking about that day. Yeah, I could have said that. I don't know. Don't do that. You need to learn to remember what you say. And when a parent comes and says, Johnny said that you said this, and he said, wow, well, I'm glad you came, because if I had said that, I would be worried about me. Here's what I actually said. There was just a couple words that got changed here in the relay. And I hope that makes a big difference. Let's talk about it. Action number four. Demonstrate humility. How do we keep teacher promises or commitments? We demonstrate humility. You respect your predecessors and their system. When I go into a new school, I made it my policy to say my first year is my listening year. Instead of going in there and trying to shake things up, the first year is my year to listen, to find out what is and why what is. It takes a lot of pressure off you, and it will prevent you from making a lot of really foolish mistakes. You need to fix things that are obviously broken. But demonstrate humility by learning why the system you walked into is there. Demonstrate humility by being a learner. If you love to learn, chances are your students will love to learn as well. Be willing to apologize. I remember vaguely a case where a student, it appeared to me, I think, cheated on a test, and I kicked him out of the classroom. Boom! And then I found out things were not as they appeared. And for the teacher to have the humility to walk out, to get that student, to bring him up in front of the classroom and say, I thought this is what occurred. And I found out since this is what actually occurred. I was wrong. And I owe this young man an apology. I'm sorry. Can you forgive me? Students need teachers that can model that. Demonstrating humility, willing to receive parents' input. Parents don't like it when you come to them and say, what should I do with your child? I hear teachers do that, and I've probably done it myself. But you respect parents by having a reasonable plan and then running it by the parents first. Going to the parents and saying, boy, we had a real issue in school today. I can't overlook this one. We really need to deal with it. Here's what I thought I was going to do, but I just wanted to run it by you first. And if you can get the parent to buy in, it respects them, and they're your partner instead of your adversary. Demonstrate humility to excel as a listener. Seek first to understand, then be understood. So today, to wrap things up, there are some priorities you should have as a teacher. One of those priorities is the promises, the implied promises that you have accepted by becoming a teacher. You can deliver on those implied promises first by being aware of them, and then by demonstrating character, competence, and humility. My goal is not to make you feel tired carrying this chain, the weight of these implied promises, but is to help you avoid the danger of blundering into this craft we call teaching, unaware of its requirements. It's as you begin to embrace these commitments or these implied promises of your profession, and as you demonstrate character, competence, and humility, it is then that you can truly be a blessing to those that you serve.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.